I have to admit I was a little distracted, Bill, because we are getting some texts at the old number.
Oh, yeah.
312-981-7200 going, how do we find you guys on the stream? So I was sending them a direct link. If you go to WGNradio.com, there is a little label up at the top. I don't know what it's called. What is it? A little button?
It's kind of like when we have a breaking news alert, there's be one up there that says,
a banner that says, listen to Bill and Wendy. So you just click on that, and it'll take you right there.
That's easy. All right.
And we have some guests in the studio.
We sure do, Wendy.
Tim Ryan is a man who has been on our show. For how long have you been coming on the show with us?
I'd probably say close to 2 years.
It is close to 2 years, isn't it? Yeah.
He is an amazing man. He's got a Man in Recovery Foundation, AMIRF.org. And you can correct me if I'm wrong, Tim, but you help people get sober.
I am the guy that helps get people sober. Like tonight, Max and I have to go out to Sandwich and deal with two people that have been living in a car shooting heroin. A neighbor confided in me, and we're going out and meet with them and hopefully be able to give them a little hope and get them into detox and get them into treatment. But, you know, a majority of the people we work with have no insurance or they have state insurance, and they don't know how to maneuver the system. And then, of course, my full-time job, I actually left Banyan, which is in Naperville in Florida. Still a great facility. I support them 100%. But I went to a smaller facility called a Haven Detox and recovery team out of Palm Beach, Florida. It's a smaller, intimate environment, but it gives me more flexibility to focus on a Man in Recovery Foundation and speaking events all over.
So you make a salary and you work for this new place.
Yep.
But you also have your Man in Recovery Foundation, which, seriously, people are listening. Their kid, their cousin, their neighbor has a drug problem. They don't know where to turn. That's where they turn.
Yep. You give us, you check us out on the web at www.amirfisinfrank.org, or you can reach us at 844-611-HOPE.
We've covered this in the past with you, but I was just out to dinner with some people over the weekend, and I was telling them about you, and the subject of heroin came up, and they asked the question that we asked you the very first time we had you on the show, which is, this was something that, although never eradicated, we thought heroin is a drug of the past. We don't have to worry about heroin anymore. But no, we do have to worry about heroin. The numbers keep getting bigger and bigger, so why?
Because it's more accessible, the cartels are flooding the streets with it. It's easier for a kid, as I've always said, to get a bag of heroin or a prescription pain pill than it is a six-pack of beer or a pack of cigarettes. They just arrested a guy from Westmont this morning in another state with 2.5 pounds of heroin.
I mean, pounds?
It's 2.5 pounds. Yeah, it's everywhere. It's so accessible. And you take one guy out, there's 50 people standing in line. Because a lot of the people that are selling it, you know, they don't have any hope. They're from broken homes. There's no more programs. You know, I'm not blaming the gangs. I'm not blaming the cartels. Everybody wants to point the finger and blame. But it's everywhere, and it's getting worse. The overdose deaths are through the roof, and they're getting worse.
I don't know if you saw the story. It was on Facebook, and it was a couple, mid-30s from Ohio. You saw this because I talked to you about it.
Awful.
He was a pilot for Spirit Airlines. They had, I think, 4 kids. A young little boy realized, hey, mom and dad didn't wake us up for school. So they went into the mom and dad's room, and the kid calls 911 and says, yeah, mom and dad, they're cold. They were dead. They overdosed. That's what they're assuming. The toxicology hasn't come through, but they did find drug paraphernalia. The guy was a pilot for Spirit Airlines, 36 years old. The woman's mother is speaking out saying, this isn't what my daughter did. She wasn't a drug addict. You look at him, although what is the face of a drug addict this time?
See, Wendy, that's, and Bill, people have this big misconception that it's the person on the corner.
Right.
It's not. It's everyone.
Everywhere.
The disease of addiction does not discriminate. Doctors, lawyers, school teachers, airline pilots, radio hosts, kids in high school, kids in college. I mean, as I've said, the youngest heroin addict I've worked with is 12 years old. The oldest is 78. this affects everybody. It affects rock stars, you name it. It affects everyone.
And the addiction can happen after just one use, can't it?
Yeah, it absolutely can. You know, and I saw a gentleman, Gabor Mate, speak a couple weeks ago in Chicago, and he's out of Vancouver, Canada. He's 73. He's been a doctor for 40 years, working with all the addicts in the inner city. And his whole take on addiction is, look, this isn't a disease. This has to do with trauma. It has to do with pain. And he said, how many people here are adopted? And 40% of the people put their hands up. He said, you're like 46,000 times more likely to become a drug addict or alcoholic due to the abandonment issues. But if I look at my life, I was adopted. Can I blame it on my older brother beat me up all the time? I don't know. But my insecurity due to my learning disabilities, dyslexia, I was always trying to fit in. So I wanted to hang with the older kids and drink and experiment with cocaine. And then the monster was unleashed. And yeah, I have that gene and Pandora's box took over. But, you know, I'm trying to learn as much as I can about this. The gentleman he had on a little earlier, the mental health side, too. I mean, 75-80% of the people that struggle with substance abuse have underlying mental health issues. And the problem is, a lot of the people that are treating the clients today, they have no experience in trauma. They're not certified in trauma. So you peel back the onion, and you're working on the substance abuse, but they're not capable of working with the trauma, or they're at treatment 3 weeks and they're out the door. This is a lifelong process. We need more organizations to come together and have full wraparound care. 3 weeks in treatment for someone doing heroin for 2 years is not the answer. It needs to be a minimum 90 days.
You mentioned a lot of the people that do heroin, even for the first time, have a lot of pain in their life. I mean, it does make sense to me when I hear you say that, because I had knee surgery. They gave me,
Narco.
Yes. I took it. It worked. It relieved the pain because you don't want pain. But then I got violently ill and threw up. So sure. I said, forget this. But that helps physical pain, but heroin helps emotional pain.
Emotional, physical, psychological. You know, people that could even been verbally abused by their parents or brother and sisters. In today's age, kids, everything is technology and it's so fast paced and I got to be the best at this. And no, just be who you are. Be comfortable in your own skin. You don't have to be number one. Parents need to communicate more and they need to pull their heads out of their backsides. Not my child. Yeah, it is your child. It's your child's friends, and get to know who they are. I mean, Max can, you know, he can
tell. Max is your son.
Yeah, Max is my 18-year-old son who, you know, watched me go through addiction. Well, go ahead and share the story, Max. What happened every Friday night?
Every Friday night, we'd watch movies. It'd be our Friday night movies. And say he'd be saying, hey, let's watch Star Wars tonight. I'd go, Dad, we'd watch that last week. Or he'd go, okay, how about Raiders of the Lost Ark? I'd go, that's 2 weeks ago. He doesn't remember anything. He would be falling asleep all the time. I'd go, God, why is Dad so tired every week? And it'd be because he's nodding out on heroin.
No. But you wouldn't expect that your dad's on heroin.
See, I never knew that because that's just what he was. That's what he was like when I grew up, and so
I. And he wasn't mean to you.
No, he was never mean. He was a great dad, but he was on heroin. I grew up with that being the norm.
You thought overworked, maybe, or forgetful.
It could have been anything. He was sick every 3 weeks or so. Like, oh, why is Dad always getting sick? Oh, he's dope sick.
Yeah.
After the fact, once they found out, you know, after I caught my case in 2010, then all the kids knew what was going on. But Max phrases it well. That was just a normal.
That's
was our
what he
life.
Knew.
Dad drank. Dad was like this, but he didn't realize the circumstances of what was really going on.
But Tim, how could this guy, who was the pilot for Spirit Airlines and just died of the heroin overdose, how was he able to fool his bosses? You're tested for drugs.
You know, they really don't drug test that
they
much,
don't?
And they say they do. And if you're a hardcore active user, and being an airline pilot, if you're a captain, you're working what 10 days a month.
Yeah.
So he might cut down or whatever. I don't know the exact circumstances, but you got to understand an addict will put as much work into trying to lie and cheat and beat the system as they will
into their job.
Yeah, we don't do the right things, you know, and whether they just started experimenting. I mean, obviously a husband and wife overdose and die, they weren't first-time users. I guarantee it they weren't.
But, see, now that's something. There's also another video that's going around on Facebook. I want to say South Carolina. There's a woman who calls 911 because her son is unconscious. She calls 911, thinks she's dead. There's a GoPro camera on the EMTs that arrive in the house, and you see this kid completely passed out on the bed. The narration on this is he's turning blue. You can tell his skin is blue. They're asking her, did he do any drugs? She goes, I don't know what he's on, but I know, you know, is he dead? Is he what? And so the EMT is saying, can you help look around to see if there's any needles or anything? They spot a needle on the floor. Another EMT team arrives. They stick him with
Narcan.
Yes. And they start calling his name because it reverses the overdose. They're calling his name. He kind of comes to, and they basically just say to him, you know, 10 more minutes, you would have been dead.
Yeah, you're dead. Your heartbeat could slow down to 2-3 beats a minute.
They said he was breathing 2 breaths a minute.
Yeah.
And I maybe good or bad, I made my kids watch that video.
It's good. People need to see what's going on. They need
it's not pretty.
To know what it's not pretty. We need to be talking about this more. We need to, you know, instead of I'm fighting with Central Illinois right now in the Champaign area. They don't want people coming in and speaking. We don't have a drug problem here. The DARE program is just fine. The DARE program was an utter failure. Just say no. Well, heck, I'm curious. Why are you telling me no? I want to try that. But coming in real talk, but offering solutions. A lot of places aren't offering. But, you know, like next week, I've got my partner Brandon Novak coming in. We're going down towards Monticello, Illinois. I think they have us in 10 schools in 2 days. We're doing 2 huge community forums. They've got billboards. They have the local news. I'm doing another radio interview. They're getting the word out there. And that's what people need to do. Just since my book's been released, I'm booked to go to New Hampshire, Vermont, North Carolina, because I tell it the way it is. But there's hope out there, too, you know.
And that's the name of your book, by the way, which, congratulations, From Dope to Hope, A Man in Recovery, Tim Ryan. This is available where? Where do people get it?
You can get it on Amazon. Just go to Amazon.com, go to books, type in From Dope to Hope, Tim Ryan. It'll pop up. It's $14.97. It's a quick read book. I think my brother read it in 6 hours.
Yeah.
But it's, go ahead, Max. You read the first 7 chapters. What was your thought going into Dad Wrote a Book to what you actually read?
Well, when I first picked it up, I thought it was going to be, oh, he's just going to talk about how he used to do drugs with people. But it's actually a really gripping story. Like, I'm not much of a reader, but, you know, if I read a book, I'll read it all the way through if it's good. And my God, I had to force myself to go to bed after reading that. It was gripping.
And you know how the story ends.
Oh, yeah, I know.
So
that's
a testament. No, I know.
Hey, here's what a mother wrote. She said, Tim, I just finished reading your book. Wow, thank you for sharing the intimate details of your life. It really helps me to understand the mindset of an addict. Every chapter was very emotional. It was very well written and very, very clearly tells the details of what you went through. I believe this book will be a very helpful tool and resources for active addicts in addiction, people in recovery, and anyone who has a family member or loved one struggling with substance abuse. I really appreciate your honesty, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, it's I tell it all. I share. My mother got it, and she's going to read it this morning. And I was telling Max on the way down, I'm like, I wonder if I should call Nana and Warner. But
yeah,
you know what? It is what it is. But it's powerful from the tripping on acid in Beverly Hills.
Will your mom be shocked to read some of this?
I think my escapades in college, running drugs, and some of the things she didn't know, because I was the best con artist in the world. I'm fine. Everything that came out of my mouth was a lie, but I had the street smarts. I could survive in any situation. But yeah, she's going to be shocked at it. But she watched it unfold. She's my mother. But there's a lot of hope in it. And man, life is good today. You know, it's crazy. I still get arrows shot at me. It's unbelievable. People still want to hate on you for helping, and oh, now you got a book out and you're trying to make money. No.
What do they care about that? If you don't need the help, then don't read the book, and don't go to amaninrecoveryfoundation.com.
Thank you. It's amazing, but you know, a majority of the money we get is going to go into the foundation to help more people.
There's never a time in your life where you say to yourself, if something happens to me tragically, if I die, then my mother's left without me, my kids are left without me, my wife is left without me. That doesn't even enter into the equation,
no.
Does it?
Why would that?
It just doesn't.
Not at all.
We talked with Deanna Adler, Stephen Adler's mother from Guns N' Roses, and she just said, we were talking to her earlier, and I said something about in your right mind, and she said, that's what you have to understand. These addicts are not in their right mind.
Not in their right mind.
You did drugs with your son.
Yeah, absolutely.
What dad would do that in their right mind? None.
No. Heck, I smoked pot with Max when he was in eighth grade.
Which, can I just say, thank you for saying that. I'm not saying it's good or bad. You did what you did, but people do things like that.
All day long.
And people are scared to admit it.
Yeah, and you know what? My best advice I learned from my buddy Rich Wostocki, who's a cop. Whatever you do, do not tell your children the things you did in high school or in college. Oh, I did some line. Don't tell your kids that stuff, because automatically you open the gate for them to think it's okay for them. But there's a lot of parents. Heck, Max has got a friend who's 18. His mom buys him booze all the time. Lets him smoke weed in the house. It's a recipe for disaster. It's a recipe for disaster. And quit being friends with your kids. I'm not friends with Max. I'm his father. He works with me now, and he works with me. He's my business partner. When he turns 21 and he's on his own or whatever, then we can be friends. Or when he's living on his own, but, you know, we have that relationship. But I'm always dad, first and foremost.
His name is Tim Ryan. Brand new book, From Dope to Hope, A Man in Recovery, now available on Amazon. And it's a man in recovery foundation.org, not com, that I said earlier, AMIRF.org. We're going to take a break. We're going to do some news and continue talking here. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder, 720 WGN. Thanks, Jude. I know you got to run. A busy day on the Rokan show
bit.
Coming up with Anna DeVlantis. When are they just going to say Ro and Anna? When does that happen?
Never.
All right. We are talking with Tim Ryan, his new book, From Dope to Hope, A Man in Recovery. I would like to read the dedication. Do you mind if I share this on the air, Tim?
Oh, absolutely.
This book is dedicated to my son, Nicholas James Hoban Ryan. I am sorry I was not a father to you. I was a friend. If I could turn back time, trust me, I would. You are always with me, my son. You are the driving force for me each and every day, Dad. I can't tell you how sweet and sorrowful that is.
Yeah, you know, it's that's why one of the reasons I had to put this book together. I wasn't a dad to Nick. I was a friend, and ultimately followed in my footsteps. And I'll be the first to say I helped kill my own son. You know, he died on my 21-month sobriety date, but, you know, he followed in my steps. And the least I can do is try to cherish his memory and take all the trials and tribulations, and that's what I do on a daily basis. I do not have a fun, glamorous job. People, oh, you're on the radio, you're on TV, you got a book. Yeah, that's all great. Come spend a week with me in my world and see the families I deal with and the hopelessness. But some of them get the hope and they get the gift, and it's a blessing, so I keep pushing forward.
Max, in losing your brother, were there times of bitterness, resentment, anger? There must have been all that and more, right?
Oh, yeah, no, definitely. When you can't really help but blame, you know, I couldn't help but blame my father for it because, I mean, you know, they did dope together. They hung out together. He was, like he said, he was part of a driving force in it. But eventually, you got to learn that he made his own decisions. The will to do it was of his own. And, you know, he didn't put the needle in his arm. He didn't inject Nick. I mean, it was his own decision, and I can only, he made his resentments, and all I wanted, he took care of his resentments, and all I wanted to do is, you know, forgive him and move forward, because, I mean, when you're holding on to the past, nothing can get done in the future, and all you can do is forgive and move forward, and, you know, start helping other people. You know, I lost my brother, it's a shame, but, you know, hating my father is not going to bring him back. The best thing I can do is help other people so that they don't lose their brothers, sons, daughters, mothers, all that.
You've been places where heroin has existed. You've probably been offered it. What do you do in those situations?
What I do is I have been offered dope before, and it's just when I talk to them, I go, man, what's the point? I try to talk to them, see, you know, why do they feel they need to do this? I actually had a friend. I was at his house. he's been white knuckling, staying off heroin for a while, and now he's just taking Xanax. I'm like, man, when are you going to be sick and tired of being sick and tired? When do you want to change this? Whenever you're, you know, whenever you're ready, give me a call. Let me know, because you don't have to live like this anymore.
Good.
And sometimes, though, people don't know there's a way out, and they're trading. Okay, I'll quit doing heroin. I'll do Xanax and this and that. And Max, what he had said about Nick. He had brought up a needle. Nick never used a needle in his life. Nick died from snorting two bags of heroin and eating a bar of Xanax and mixing them. That's what killed him. So people have this big, well, my son snorts a little bit of heroin. One bag can kill your kid.
I don't even know you can snort heroin. Oh, God, am I naive.
See, the heroin today, it's so pure, you don't need to shoot it. The heroin in coming out of Vietnam in the early 70s, you had to shoot it because the potency was 12 to 14% pure. The heroin I could buy on the streets of Chicago could be upwards of 70 to 90% pure. And if it's mixed with fentanyl, which is 100 times stronger than pure heroin, it's a recipe for death.
My sons are teenagers, and I said when you're 21, you can drink. Thankfully, at this point, they don't. Maybe they will before they're 21, but at this point, they don't. And I said, when you open a can of beer, you know what you're getting. When you get heroin from someone or even pot, you don't know what you're getting because you don't know what it's mixed with, and that's what's killing people.
Absolutely. And like Nick thought he was invincible, too. He had overdosed 8 times. Dad, I got this under, and the 9th time is when it got him. And like Max said, Nick had been to treatment 6 times. Nick knew exactly what to do, but he chose not to do it because you have to work for recovery. Recovery isn't just going to treatment. That's just the beginning. It's an entire lifestyle change, people, places, and things. You need to change every aspect of your life. And I work very diligently to stay sober. My sobriety is number one. Then everything else I do comes into place. My job, my foundation, my speaking events are not my recovery. It's part of my recovery. It's a gift I get to do. But for me, it's still working with the sponsor, attending 4 12-step meetings a week and sponsoring other people, getting out of myself and giving back what was so freely given to me.
I know everybody's wake-up call is different, but for so many people, you would think losing somebody close to you would be the wake-up call, but a lot of times it's not.
Well, take one of Nick's best friends, Adam, who worked. When Nick died, Adam moved in with me and my son Tanner and lived with us for 10 months, plugged into recovery, sent him to Florida to work for our treatment center. He came back and, December 10th of a year ago, I found him dead from a heroin overdose after 17 and a half months sobriety. Now, he lost his best friend. People think I'm different. I know what I'm doing, and you don't know. You don't know. It's like playing Russian roulette with 5 bullets instead of 1.
But you said it's hard. Recovery is not easy, and it isn't, and it takes a while. If someone's listening right now and has a problem with heroin, I know they say, why is it worth it? Because you'll be alive. But it really seems overwhelming to go through the recovery process.
It's a journey. It's not a race. And as addicts, they might get 30 days or 3 months sober, and now we expect everything back. I want the apartment. I want the brand new car. I need the Air Jordans, and I want to be the manager of the job I'm working at, washing toilets. The entitlement has to go away. People ask me, I have no thoughts of drinking and using drugs whatsoever. That obsession and compulsion has been lifted due to me living a life of recovery. I've had a spiritual awakening, but that is the most important thing in my life. But it's much easier to keep using drugs. Much easier. We're
creatures. So why stop using it?
Because eventually you're going to die.
End of discussion. That's it.
Or death or prison.
You will die.
100% you'll die. And they're dying younger and younger and younger. And I'm seeing an older generation, 45 to 60 to 75 years old, that are abusing pain pills and abusing heroin.
Heroin does not discriminate. I swear to God, I think of heroin and I think of Sid and Nancy, and that's what I think of. Rock and rollers, I don't think of people in their 40s, their 50s, certainly not a 12-year-old, but it's everywhere now.
School teachers, there's a lady I've become friends with who was the soccer mom, and all the other soccer moms took these pills, and it was their little pep pills, and it was Adderall, and then, I've got some Oxycontin, and 6 months later, she's doing heroin. Soccer mom doing heroin. It's not the end thing to be doing, but then people still don't want to talk about it. I can't tell you when I walk out of your studio a month, 2 months down the road, I heard you on the Bill and Wendy show 6 months ago, and I've been meaning to call you, but why I was afraid to. What are you afraid of? I can't jump through the phone, but a lot of parents don't want to hear the truth because I tell it the way it is. What was your other caller?
We were talking about earlier, thankfully at this point in my life, my kids don't have an addiction problem. If it comes down to it, yes, you love your kids, you support your kids, but at some point you have to maybe kick them out. Tina called earlier. Tina, this is Tim Ryan, his son Max. What did you want to share with us?
Yeah. Well, yeah, Wendy, you know, it really triggered the need for me to kind of share our family story with regards to tough love and the difference it can make in someone's life. And this is actually the tale of two of my brothers. And my oldest brother, in his late teens and 20s, became, you know, a very severe alcoholic and was doing other drugs and things as well. But his predominant drug of choice was alcohol. He had gone to school at IIT and flunked out and was trying to hold jobs and stuff, but he would always get fired for drinking. And he was living with my parents, and he would occasionally go to AA and they would think everything was fine. But he was really just a severe alcoholic, and he would steal money from them and all kind of things. So finally, you know, my mom and my dad kicked him out, and he wandered out west and wandered around for about 2 years. And finally had an epiphany one time when he had been brought into a hospital, and his blood alcohol level at that point was like 0.32. And he remembers coming to in the hospital, and he was in a room with this other old guy, and he looked over at the old guy who was trying to drink coffee, and his hands were shaking and he was all scruffy. And all of a sudden a voice said to him, "That's you. And if you don't stop drinking, you're going to die." And so he quit cold turkey. But he says to this day that had mom and dad not kicked him out, he would have died, because he said that's the best thing that ever happened to him. So fast forward. Yeah, go ahead.
No, go. Keep. Finish your story. I'm sorry.
So fast forward, about 20, 25 years later, one of my other brothers in his 40s was married, had a son, and he lost a job and couldn't find another job and started drinking and drinking. And it's absolutely, like you had mentioned, that it's your Pandora's box. It's in our family, alcoholism, for sure. Like, it's, you know, a problem. And he started drinking, and his wife divorced him. He moved in with my mom, who by then, my dad had been passed away many years before. So it was just my mom. So he kind of became her companion, and they would go out places and this and that, but he was doing more serious drinking. He was drinking vodka all the time and hiding it. And we knew, and we would beg her, you know, you got to help make him do something. We got to make him, you know, kick him out, or we got to put him in rehab. And she was so much in denial. And my oldest brother, who had been kicked out, you know, years before, said to her, "Mom, please, you know, the best thing you ever did for me was when you kicked me out of the house and you cut me off. You know, he's not going to get better until he hits rock bottom." Well, she just couldn't do that. And I think in retrospect, it was my dad that was the rock at that time that helped that to happen. And 6 years ago yesterday, my brother died from alcoholism.
Well, I'm very sorry to hear that. And, you know, it's difficult because it's hard for a husband, a wife, a mom and dad, a loved one to take their emotions out of this, because, Wendy, you had just said earlier, I don't think I could kick my kids out.
I don't think I could.
You know, but when it gets to the point when everything's disappearing, you know, Max will attest to it. You know, when I was in prison and the knock on the door came, or the phone call, was it the police calling to say Nick had died? Is he back in jail? You just never knew. And we got to the point with Nick to where when he got out of jail the last time, Shannon took him to lunch and fed him and said, "Nick, we're done. You're not coming to my house. You're not coming to Dad's. You need to own your addiction, because this will destroy you." And as a gentleman and Mrs. Adler spoke earlier, if you have a loved one struggling, get into some type of support group. Al-Anon, Families Anonymous, NAR-Anon. Yeah. There's a Christian-based program. I run support groups. See a therapist. You have to take care of yourself because the disease affects the entire family.
Tina, I'm sorry about your brothers. We thank you for sharing this story. And hopefully people listening aren't faced with this decision, but you have to do what's best.
Well,
I agree.
Thank you, Tina.
Thanks, Tina.
You're welcome.
You know, getting them to have to walk the streets for a while or live under lower whack or drive or go without food, yeah, they could go out and die. I had a mom call 2 weeks ago that was getting ready to kick her son out, and I said, I need to explain something to you. Your son can die. But, of course, he can die in your house, too. She said, Tim, I fully accepted that my son can die. He was on the streets for 8 days and finally called me, and I got him into the detox, and he's in treatment right now. Some people choose to just use. I don't know.
That's a good point, though. Chances are they're going to die either way.
Absolutely. Well, 100%. And go ahead, Bill.
It's tricky because, and you know, because you've lived through this, you don't know as a family member, as a loved one, is it time to try tough love? Is it time to be as supportive as I possibly can?
Well, you know, it's a lot of families. I was just dealing with another family, and they said, well, we tried to do an intervention. I said, who tried to do one? Well, we got the brothers over, and then they got in a fist fight, and families try to come in because I watched the TV show and read some letters. Have someone come in. If it's not me, there's a ton of good interventionists out there. I can hook you up with getting the proper professional to come into your house. And I'm not the guy making, here's your options that are out there. And then, hey, you got trauma. I know who to refer you to. All I do is refer people. You know, I'm not a counselor. I'm not a clinician. I'm a stone cold drug addict and alcoholic in recovery. But God bless me with a gift, and most times I'm walking out of that house and that person's agreeing to go to detox, then we can get them on the right road. And they might walk out of detox. That's on them.
Can you talk a little bit about the psychology of the intervention? Is what's going on, because I've never been a part of one, I've only seen them in movies and TV shows, is it that person all of a sudden realizes, they look around the room and they see the 8 or 10 or 12 people that are close to them all saying the same thing? Is it supposed to work where you go, oh, wow, it really must be bad if all these people are here?
You know, the way I do it a lot of times, I don't want a ton of people there. I don't want too many people because the person feels overwhelmed.
Yeah,
I'm coming in and just calling them on their BS, finding common ground with them, because whether it's drugs or alcohol, I've done it all. So I can associate with them, and then I just kind of start working them on, all right, you're 26 years old, you live in your mom's basement, you don't have a driver's license, you don't have a job, but you're telling me how you want to get this apartment and get married. You're delusional. You're delusional, and you're going to quit on your own, and you've been trying for the past 8 years to quit on your own. Maybe it's time to put your hand up and say, you know what, I need some help. Time to man up. Most of the time they listen and say, you know what, you're right. But every situation's different. I try to do as much due diligence up front prior to walking into a house, because when I'm walking in, I need to have an option on where I'm going with them right away. I'm not coming in and saying, having you, Bill, say, all right, well, I'm ready to go to treatment. Oh, well,
I'll call you tomorrow.
Yeah, we got to figure out where you need to have somewhere to take them immediately. And then it's, you know, my first question when someone calls is, do you have good insurance? Do you have no insurance? Or do you have state insurance? Because now I know what we have to work with. And it's as simple as that.
So all hope is definitely not lost. If someone's listening right now and their kid, their neighbor, whatever, their wife, husband needs help, maybe they don't have insurance, what do they do?
Call us. Call us at 844-611-HOPE, H-O-P-E. Check us out on the web at www.amirfasinfrank.org. Give us a call. We'll talk you through what we need to do and get you on the right road.
The book is called From Dope to Hope, A Man in Recovery. His name is Tim Ryan. This is raw. This is real. This is you.
Yeah, we're going to follow up in a week or two after you two read this. And I'm telling you, you're going to be shocked.
You know, I'm anxious to read it, and I know Wendy is too, but I'm so anxious to hear what your mom experiences.
We'll get her on the air next time.
All right.
We'll get her on the air.
You thanked us in this book, which is, we thank you for thanking us, but it's silly. You're the one doing the work.
You have to understand, there was some people that supported me through the thick and thin of this. You know, Suzette Papadakis, who We ultimately opened Banyan together, but she started with my support group. She had her own private practice, and I talked her into shutting it down and opening Banyan and Kirsten and Shannon and Danny Langlos and Brian Cunningham, the chief of police in Woodridge, and Rich Wistocki and Congressman Holcren and Foster and you two, and there's many more variables. But you guys gave me the opportunity to come on your airwaves and see what we're doing. And Wendy, we were introduced through a mutual friend whose son was struggling. And it just works. But I need to give acknowledgments to the people that helped me get to where I'm at today. And I'll never forget that. See, I would forget things like that in the past. And I don't. And I'm truly grateful that I'm able to come on this show and offer hope, because my phone's already starting to blow up. And when I walk out of here, we're going to get some more people some help today. And if I couldn't get on the airwaves here, they would have not known how to reach out to me.
When I did hear about Tim, it was a mutual friend. And I said, my God, this guy sounds like a saint. I said, Bill, we have to have him on. And if we can help in just one small way to get someone to reach out to you to get their loved one off of drugs, then we've all won.
Yeah.
And we all have to talk about it. Don't be ashamed anymore.
No, and I'm telling you, I could probably attest to the numerous times I've been on here, there's probably been over 100 people that have been guided into treatment due to you two.
Good. It's a start.
It's huge. That's a huge start. And I thank you both very much, and enjoy the books, and have a great day.
Thanks, Tom.
You as well.
Thanks,
thank
Max.
You guys.
Appreciate
you guys
staying here tremendously. We'll take a break. More show coming your way next. Stay here. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
We are streaming.
California streaming, Wendy.
Ba-da, ba-da-da-da.
That's right.
On a sunny day.
Yeah.
You know, we just had Tim Ryan in here, his book, From Dope to Hope, A Man in Recovery. I'm kind of scared to read this.
Because why? Why would you be afraid to read it?
Well, I know Tim's story.
Yeah.
But I don't think I know the intimate details of his life being a heroin addict and alcoholic. And yeah. I feel like I'll look at him differently now.
Oh, no, I
can't. It's just going to surprise me.
Yeah.
Because he's gotten it all together right now.
But that's a good thing.
I know.
I mean, you know it ends well.
I know. He gave us a copy of the book. He actually gave us two extra copies. Can we give these away?
We should definitely give them away.
I just think it's, if we can help someone, I can't wait to read this, yet I'm scared.
Don't be scared.
I am a little suburbanite.
Leave a nightlight on.
But I'm this little suburbanite who's, you know, I might have had a beer before I was 21.
You might have had a beer before the show. Who knows? I see empty Pabst cans in our office. Who knows who's responsible for those?
But I don't understand this type of addiction.
Well, the book will help you with that then, hopefully.
All right.
You'll know more.
From Dope to Hope, A Man in Recovery. Here's the number to call, 312-235-2525. What number callers?
Callers 5 and 6. Be callers 5 and 6 at the number Wendy just gave you, 312-235-2525, and get From Dope to Hope.
You know, really, when you think about other people's problems, almost everybody has it way worse than I do. And then you.
Yeah. I have to cop to that. True. Today's show was very serious. We started out with the death of Chuck Barris. Then we went to what happens if you have a rock star son and it doesn't go well. Then some psychological help from Dr. John Duffy. Then heroin addiction. Tomorrow, balloons.
We got to
do balloons
and the horns.
Yeah, we'll blow some horns tomorrow. It'll be much happier. I have a Nerf ball I might bring in. We can
really?
Throw that around the room. Yeah, it'll be much happier tomorrow.
It really was serious. Although, I'll tell you, all of them had good endings.
Oh, without a doubt. Isn't that nice?
It really is.
Yes. Well, Chuck Barris is not so much.
Yeah.
That didn't end well. But the rest of them, yes.
I forgot about Chuck Barris. See how quickly we forget?
No.
All right, we have our winners. Aaron from Wheaton, Joyce in Chicago, I'm not saying they have addictions or addiction issues, but they have a great book to read, and it's called From Dope to Hope, A Man in Recovery, Tim Ryan. It's out on Amazon, and he really works very hard to help people. If you're listening and you have an addiction or know someone who does and you don't have insurance or your insurance is not that great, contact Tim Ryan. You can go to his website, AMIRF.org. It stands for A Man in Recovery Foundation.org.
They find ways to make it financially feasible to get yourself help. And Tim has told us in the past, we didn't really delve into it this time, but he's open 24 hours a day. He gets calls all day and all night from people saying, I need help, or somebody close to me needs help. And he's picking up those calls and getting you help. So, you know, that's an incredible guy right there.
Yeah, but that's a stress-filled life, isn't it?
It sure is. Yes, it is.
Constantly helping people. He's like a superhero.
Yes, yes.
All right.
Tomorrow, kazoos. We will have kazoos.
We
all
do
the show tomorrow.
Puppies, bunnies, balloons, kazoos.
Right?
Horns.
I may bring in some whipped cream. Who's to say? It's very possible there will be a whipped cream fight.
Keep it in your pants.
Soupy Sales will be by at 12
not.
O'clock. And
isn't
we'll
he done?
Throw pies at each other. Yes, he is.
Okay, because I was going to say if he isn't, he is
yes,
now.
Yes, he is.
All right, well, thanks for hanging out. It was a special edition of the Bill and Wendy Show today. Sometimes we like to help people, and sometimes we just like to be silly goofs.
Yes.
Tomorrow, silly goofs?
Silly goof day. Tomorrow. So thanks, everybody, for listening. We really appreciate it. On After Us, if you're on the stream, if you're on the WGN stream, what do they get to hear, Wendy?
Nothing.
Nothing. Be thankful for what you have.
Because you could have nothing, and
nothing.
You will next.
And some people will prefer that. There will be people who listen and go, I wouldn't mind another 12 to 1 should be more nothing. This nothing is good. That's fine. We're not saying you're wrong. Bye, everybody.